This is the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest today is from Cotton Incorporated, Dr. Galen Morgan, set to join us as we talk cotton research in just a few moments. First off, let's look at hard red winter wheat. Brad Rippey is a meteorologist with USDA. He says,
winter wheat is a big story right now. It's breaking dormancy and developing across the south, starting to green up even in the north with some of the warmer weather. We currently see 69% of the U.S. winter wheat production area experiencing drought, and that is reflected in the fact that we are seeing our lowest U.S. winter wheat conditions at this time of year since 1996, going back more than a quarter century ago. So certainly the drought coverage matches up with those very low crop conditions, as reported by USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, and we're joined today by Dr. Galen Morgan, who's with Cotton Incorporated, serves as Director of Ag and Environmental Research. Hey, Galen, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, glad to be here, Tony.
When we talk about the Cotton Belt, I would imagine your job is somewhat challenging because you've got areas of the Cotton Belt who've had a lot of rain, and then you've got other areas of the Cotton Belt that if they could be in desert conditions, probably would be an upgrade because they're so dry at this point. Is that a challenge as you're working with growers from basically coast to coast?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a challenge more than anything, just trying to keep up with it, Tony, because like you mentioned, the Delta region of the Cotton Belt is quite wet right now. And of course, Texas is in a pretty dramatic drought. So it's mainly just keeping up with where the weather is coming through and kind of how the crop is progressing. But it definitely keeps it interesting, that's for sure, and trying to learn and some of the cultural practices and how people manage nutrients and other things, you know, affiliated with the lack of moisture or too much moisture in some situations is many of the things that we're looking at Cotton Incorporated. A lot of the research that we do support, you know, does focus on these regional projects so that we can make sure and address, you know, whether it's semi-arid region in West Texas or 60 plus inches of rainfall in, you know, the East Coast kind of thing.
Well, let's build on that. We see it on a daily basis, just this idea of input cost, not just increasing, but in many instances, kind of record input cost, which I imagine has quite a few producers wondering about their nutrient management decisions for 2022. So as we kind of push this rock off the side of the cliff here, what are some things you're kind of watching here?
Yes, in particular for y'all's area, Tony, I mean, y'all been essentially no rainfall for 6 months now, and that's for, you know, a good portion of West Texas and up into Oklahoma and Kansas as well. You know, we just kind of have to look at what was taken off that field last year, and what nitrogen nutrients or nutrients may still be in that field that our crop could use this year, and then kind of make an educated decision on how much we could cut back on our nutrient applications for 2022. And, you know, just an example is that, you know, a lot of the research that was done by Texas A&M and others long ago, I mean, in many cases, they proved there's nitrates, soil nitrate, which is plant-available nitrogen in the soil, that those cotton, it will carry over from one year to the next. And, you know, if we can quantify that through, you know, soil sampling, then that could be credited and taken off what would typically be applied as nitrogen fertilizer. So I think that's one area that folks could definitely look at, and, you know, possibly cut back on their nitrogen. You know, obviously too, just taking into account, the long range weather predictions and things like that is just making sure the nutrient recommendations would be using a realistic yield goal You know, we may not reach our, you know, average yields on a year like this. So maybe we need to cut back on, you know, have a realistic yield goal and be able to cut back on fertilizer from that perspective as well. And, you know, another thing too, if growers have been doing a good job managing their nutrients in the years past, they probably have some of that banked in the soil, if you will. Of course, you don't know that until you do a soil test. But if you do a soil test and those nutrients are there, you could probably use that as a guide as to how much you could back off. And then on irrigated cotton, you know, I don't know exactly what the nutrient levels are in the, you know, the irrigation water out there, but I know, you know, it can be, you know, in the maybe 10 part per million on nitrates, for example. You know, and I kind of just did some quick math here somewhere if I can find my notes. But, you know, just, you know, and if growers know this already, what the nitrates are in their well water, if they have 10 parts per million, which isn't all that high, and they're applying 12 inches of water, that would equate to 27 pounds of nitrogen, plant available nitrogen that they're applying to that field. So I think that could be credited and subtracted off, you know, a typical, what they would typically put out as nitrogen fertilizer as well.
So in the past, we've heard of nitrogen being there. Obviously, the soil sample will help us identify if it's there. Without rainfall, we're not going to grow a crop. So I guess that's kind of off to the side there. But is there anything that, if we're able to identify that there is nitrogen there, to actually help the crop make use of it?
Well, definitely, you know, even if that there's soil nitrates there, you know, typically that crop does need a little bit of nitrogen fertilizer kind of to get kicked off, to make sure it gets off to a strong start along with, you know, phosphorus as well and any other nutrients that may be limiting. But just making sure that at least there are some nutrients there in the beginning so that those small seedlings, you know, can develop a good root system and go down into the soil and pull up and find and pull up that nitrogen that's, you know, down there from years past.
As we, again, kind of look at this idea of the nutrient management, and I know our focus is pretty much been on the nitrogen side, what are other areas that producers need to keep in mind, especially if we do get a crop, a stand going, and Mother Nature helps us out along the way? Is there anything else we need to be keeping in mind?
Yeah, so, I mean, we definitely need to get a little bit of whether it's dry land or irrigated, I would suggest getting at least some of that fertilizer out, you know, just, you know, prior to planting or right at planting. You know, obviously with some of the weather forecast and the, you know, very little, if any, moisture in the soil profile, there's no use having too much money out there in the fertilizer form. But at the same time, we don't want to get, you know, too far behind. Like you said, if it turns off like it did last year, and you get you do get some rainfall in May and into June, we don't want to get too far behind the eight ball so that we can't catch up. And especially, you know, I don't know about the fertilizer supply chains out there, but if the supply chains are kind of backed up, you know, then getting fertilizer could be a bit of a challenge as well. So I think just kind of balancing that, putting out some of it up front and probably less up front this year than in years past when the weather forecasts are better. But putting some of that up front and then coming in a timely manner, which would typically be, you know, we want to make sure that the nitrogen is there and available to the plant, which means down in the soil. By the time that plant goes into kind of the late square to first bloom stage.
And I guess finally here with a couple of minutes left, obviously our focus has been on nutrient management here, but that's not all you're really focused on. What are some other things that you're kind of watching, whether it's in dry areas or you mentioned the Delta with a little more moisture in their soil profile at this point. What are some other areas that you're watching as far as that first 40 days of cotton development?
Yeah, I mean, so a couple of key things. One is obviously weed management, you know, starting clean with that. And again, I know that these input costs are really scary, but I think one area that growers do not want to cut or should not cut, you know, corners on is on, you know, weed management. We're seeing more and more herbicide resistant weeds. And if you ever get behind, especially like with pigweed, it's really hard, if not impossible, to kind of catch up on that. The other thing, one of the other big pushes we have here is we have numerous seed quality type research going on. So planting seed quality, looking at ways, again, to make sure the best seed possible is getting in the ground and getting off to a strong start, which then leads into, you know, better nutrient uptake and, you know, hopefully in the end, you know, higher yields as well.
If we want to keep up with what's going on, whether it's your research or some of the other research and work that's going on at Cotton Incorporated, is there a good website that we can really, no pun intended, dig into?
Yeah, so cottoncultivated.com. It's a new, well, it's an updated webpage that we've done here, and it's kind of neat because you can customize it to things that are kind of your interest based off geography, or, you know, if someone's more interested in agronomic things versus, you know, pest management type things, you can kind of really hone in on those things that are of specific interest to you, again, by geography or by discipline, either one. So it's kind of a neat component to it. But, yeah, it's cottoncultivated.com.
Yep, that's a great website, great place to start. Dr. Galen Morgan is Director of Agricultural and Environmental Research with Cotton Incorporated. Again, the website, cottoncultivated.com. It's the Agribusiness Report.
Why sorghum?
I think sorghum is a smart choice for growers because it just fits well with our limited moisture. There's a lot of improvement the last few years. It's just been a really good crop for us. It just works.
Sorghum has the ability over many crops to sit and wait on moisture, so it's a smart choice there.
Sorghum is a smart choice because it is flexible and tough. It's a good crop.
Rain or shine, sorghum is the smart choice.
Cotton growers, take out yield-robbing nematodes with an in-furrow application of Averland FC from Vive Crop Protection. A cost-effective solution, Averland FC fights early season nematodes for healthier seedlings and stronger plant stands. Averland FC is the only abamectin product registered in furrow for nematodes in cotton, and it's compatible with other crop inputs. To learn more, talk to your retailer or visit vivecrop.com. Averland FC is a restricted-use product. Read and follow label instructions.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Special guest, Dr. Galen Morgan, with Cotton Incorporated.
The formula for success is a simple one. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why cotton growers looking to improve yield potential plant Delta Pine brand cotton, featuring 100 years of proven yield potential and exclusive genetics in every bag. Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with strong cotton from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
The best thing you can put on your crop is your shadow. Your need to be in the field won't change, and the Cotton Research and Promotion Program was put into place to make sure you get the most from every minute you're out there. That's why the Cotton Board and Cotton Incorporated work alongside growers to spur innovation, fund research, and foster sustainability so generations of farming families can walk the same turn rows for years to come. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton. Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report, and our special guest from Cotton Incorporated, Dr. Galen Morgan.
Market opportunities, input costs, and drought will all be discussed at the 2022 Beef Cattle Conference in Canadian, Texas, Tuesday and Wednesday, April 26th and 27th. Get your tickets now. Seating is limited for this powerful event, including special keynote speaker, former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Call 806-323-9114. That's 806-323-9114 to reserve your seats today. Seating is limited.
Cotton growers, take out yield-robbing nematodes with an in-furrow application of Averland FC from Vive Crop Protection. A cost-effective solution, Averland FC fights early-season nematodes for healthier seedlings and stronger plant stands. Averland FC is the only abamectin product registered in-furrow for nematodes in cotton, and it's compatible with other crop inputs. To learn more, talk to your retailer or visit vivecrop.com. Averland FC is a restricted-use product. Read and follow label instructions.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
As May as the month of USDA's first look at its new crop year in its supply and demand estimates, April was focused on revision of the current marketing year based on new data, such as the most recent quarterly grain stocks report. According to USDA Chief Economist Seth Meyer,
a lot of the market is paying a lot of attention to prospective planting. So the planting intentions for the coming season, we continue to get grain and rice stocks reports, which we did last week, which sets us up, really tells us what production is likely to look like through the rest of 2022. So we incorporate all of that information and true up the supply and demand balance sheets, either for the 21-22 crop year or for the 22 livestock year that gives us additional information on supplies.
The chief economist clarifies,
we're really looking at the prior year's crop as it's being used and traded, and overhanging all of this is prospective plantings,
which were issued for the year by USDA at the end of last month. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Beef and hog producers in seven states could soon have a new packing plant. Tom Gleason reports.
Brent Clark told me and those gathered at the Dixon Springs research facilities that belong to the U of I that he and his partners had been working on its development since before the pandemic.
We started in about March of 2020, discussing the need in the marketplace and the region for meat processing, protein processing. And the pandemic set in soon thereafter, and it sort of highlighted the need for processing, more processing in our area. And so that was kind of the starting point.
How did you highlight it? What do you mean?
Well, when you're a producer, there were no slots, no time availabilities to have your animals processed at local processors, because we're in a part of the state, we're in a region of the country that is very limited on the amount of processing that is available for both cattle and hogs. And so when the pandemic hit, we were already tight in those processing plants, and then it was like people panicked and just filled them up. And we are at a point now, even today, that it takes still about a year to have something, a year out to get an appointment to get something processed.
We're in deep southern Illinois. How many states do you expect to serve this plant?
I think it's going to be about seven states will come with product, livestock to our plant. Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, Tennessee, Mississippi, Arkansas, and Missouri.
What will be the processing capacity of the plant?
We're going to start out with our first line, and it'll handle 2,800 beef a month and 5,600 hogs a month. That's the first line. The second line basically doubles that capacity, and we'll turn that on once we get rolling.
Why were you at Dixon Springs tonight?
Well, Dixon Springs is like home plate for us. I mean, it's the Southern Illinois local producers, and that's where we're at. We're located in Williamson County, which is in deep Southern Illinois. And this would be home plate to start out with these producers getting the first crack at this opportunity.
Again, that was Brent Clark. He's one of the owners of the proposed Saline River Farms processing plant that would be located in Creel Springs, Illinois. That's in the deep southern part of the state. Jeff Beasley is a cattle producer actually from Creel Springs, and he was at the meeting on Wednesday evening. He's also a past president of the Illinois Beef Association. He's not completely convinced this packing plant can compete. I asked him why.
I've sold enough cattle over the years, followed the industry long enough, that I know that the four big packers, plus all the small, medium-sized packers, they're competing for X number of cattle. So these guys are just going to step into that fray, and they're not going to just be able to go out and cherry pick the cattle they want. They're going to have to get competitive, and my question was, how are you going to be able to match the Tysons, the JBS, et cetera, to buy those cattle and procure those cattle that you need? So I just thought that was a valid question to ask those guys if that's something they've really thought about.
We had that question tonight, and it was an interesting moment because I stepped back to really think about the question when it was asked. And my initial reaction is, well, we're going to be here, we're close by. But you know what it really comes down to is we have to deliver as a company as well.
That's Jeff Diedrich. He's one of the four partners in the proposed Saline River Farms packing plant facility.
Yes, proximity is going to be extremely important, but the quality of product that we bring to the table will be very important.
They say beef cattle and hog producers in a 7-state area should expect it to open about 18 months after construction begins. That has yet to be scheduled. I'm Todd Gleason.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
At Golden Harvest, our best skill is knowing how to listen. From our Gold Series soybean and game-changing corn portfolios to our expert insights housed in the Illuminate digital agronomy platform, everything we offer is an answer to what we've heard from you. This is how we listen.
Copyright 2021 Syngenta. The trademarks or service marks used herein are the property of a Syngenta Group company. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners.
United Ag is one of the largest association health plans to offer healthcare benefits for the agricultural industry. Their mission is to bring innovative healthcare solutions to agriculture by meeting their members' employee benefit needs. Join today and take advantage of the premier benefits offered by United Ag. United Ag is committed to contributing to a strong and healthy ag industry. For more information or to join, visit www.unitedag.org.